Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of Across the Broken Stars, and I'm joined by my co-host, starting with Dirk Ashton.
I'm Dirk Ashton, goat author of the Paternus Trilogy.
Rob J. Hayes.
Is that what we can do? We can just label ourselves the goat. Hi, I'm Rob Hayes.
Well, Dirk is wearing a goat mask at the moment, so it kind of makes sense.
Author of Never Die. There's a book. And a bunch of others.
Mm-hmm. Good ones.
And Michael R. Fletcher.
I am Michael R. Fletcher, author of Beyond Redemption.
Nice. I love that gain on the microphone there. Today's episode, we are going to be doing a listener questions round. But before we get started, just a quick shout out to our new patron, Lance. Lance, thanks for helping support the
show. Thanks, Lance.
Yeah. Take it away with the applause.
You rock.
Nice. So, if you're not already familiar with the Patreon, we do, like, plug it every episode, but just in case you're not familiar with what it is, basically, it's a way for you to give, like, a small monthly donation to the show, and in exchange, you get cool rewards, like early access to our books. At the moment, you can get early access to Sins of the Mother, which is the 4th book in the War Eternal series by our very own Rob J. Hayes, if you sign up to a certain tier on Patreon. And yeah, there's other cool bonuses that you can get on there as well. And the link to it is just down in the show notes below. So,
and we
kicking
use
off
all
with
the money
first
that we get from Patreon to feed Jed's cocaine addiction.
That's right. It's the only reason I have energy to record
how
these
so
things.
Chipper.
That's why I have so much exuberance and enthusiasm.
That and the fact that he's 13.
Mostly the first one. So, we had a listener, we had Kev ask us. Kev sounds very similar to my character Kev from Thunder Heist, so that was weird getting a question from your character. But anyway, we had Kev sending in a question to us saying, just wanted to say how much I'm enjoying the podcast you guys put together. I've been working my way through them since I found it, and only have about 40 left to listen to. I love how only 40 left. We've put out a lot of these things.
I guess.
Kev finds it a perfect mix of enjoyable banter and useful tips for my writing. One question I have for you guys is, how do you feel about Brandon Sanderson's recent Kickstarter that has gone over $20 million in just a few days? Wow, already very
yeah,
behind the times.
Yeah,
it's like it ended on $41.5 million or something like that.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah, the figures are a bit out. This was like in the early days of it. So Kev asks, do you feel like it benefits the genre and fantasy writers as a whole, increased publicity, etc.? Or do you think it carves out a bigger share for Sanderson and limits people trying new writers, spending $500 on 4 books instead of 4 books?
Nope.
Kev also says, what is it? No doubt about it, the guy can churn out books and is a wizard at marketing. That's not fair. We are the only wizards. That's why we have a podcast called Wizards, Warriors, and Words. Take it back, Kev.
Agreed. Take it
and
back.
Yeah, that's basically the extent of the question. So, Kev, thanks for sending in a question. I feel insulted that you didn't refer to us as the wizards. But apart from that, you've done all the right things in your question. You've complimented us. You said we're great. But you haven't called us wizards, so it's a little concerning, quite frankly. So, what do we think?
I've seen, you know, there's been a lot on social media going back and forth and people blogging, pros and cons. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who is, like, really are saying things, you know, they talk about things like it's hurting Trad Pub. It's Trad Pub is hurting Trad Pub. Sanderson is not hurting anything. And if anything, it's already been proven now that Brandon has brought thousands upon thousands of new people to Kickstarter who are, it's already proven now, we've seen it. I've run three Kickstarters, and I have three friends running Kickstarters right now, four, actually, who are getting people who have only ever backed one Kickstarter, Brandon Sanderson, before, and they're backing these other people. One of the first things Brandon did was start backing other Kickstarters while his Kickstarter was running, other fantasy author book and sci-fi book Kickstarters. And this is a true and pure example of a rising tide lifts all ships. He's not taken anything away from anyone else, except for perhaps out of the pockets of big trad publishers in New York, possibly, right? Because they're not getting their cut of this series of books that he's funded through this. But they've been shooting themselves in the foot in a lot of ways. I have nothing really against TradPub, if you can do it without it, he doesn't need the gatekeeper anymore. He doesn't need the proof or the legitimacy. He doesn't need their publicity machine. And the fact that he's not using it, and he's already, I mean, they've already made literally millions and millions of dollars, many millions of dollars from his books. I think it's great, you know. It's easy. It's easy to complain about it, but I think every complaint that I've seen, every even well-written negative piece about it, really, to me, all kind of comes down to sour grapes. If anyone thinks that they aren't, that something has hurt someone, an author or readers, then I don't believe that's true.
No, to be honest, I can sum my thoughts up with, yeah, well done, Sanderson. Bloody hell, mm-hmm. You did it, mate. Nice. Like, mm-hmm. What did he do? Yep. He launched a successful Kickstarter. His company supplied jobs for I don't know how many people. He's lifting up other authors by recommending these other Kickstarters to people who are backing him. The books that he's providing are actually pretty good value for money. Like, I backed for the audiobook level, which works out $15 per audiobook, which is cheaper than I get them on Audible. And it cuts out the middleman, basically. The money goes straight to the author, so I'm happy with that. And then the people that are buying these sort of, like, special edition, you know, really fancy hardbacks, well, that's because that's what they want. They want the hardbacks. It's not taking money away from any other authors but they won't buy other books. People like to collect books. It's what they do. So if he can provide really nice, like, collectible ones, go for it. People will buy them. Yeah. And they'll enjoy them. So, yeah, well done, Sanderson. Nice one.
You won writing. Well done. What about you, Mike? Any last thoughts to add to that?
Yeah, not really. I mean, we travel in different circles. His readers are mostly not my readers. So it's not like he's stealing sales from me. It's Kickstarter. I will probably never, ever, ever, ever do a Kickstarter unless I achieve a level like him where I have a staff of however many people to do it for me. I'm just not going to do it. I don't need to. I don't want to. It looks like effort, and not fun.
There are a couple of Kickstarters running right now where there is a company that, for a very reasonable percentage, does all the work for you. Will White's, AC Cobbles, David Estes just finished one being
Honestly, we could do an episode on Kickstarter. I don't understand the why. I can do everything through Amazon.
Money
and I get paid for it.
Money and new readers.
Get book sales are going up. I don't need to ask for money up front. I will front the cash for cover art and illustrations, and I will take the risk because it's a business to me. I maybe it's just me, but I have no reason to do a Kickstarter.
I think
if you're getting the results you want,
these really nice collectible editions that I wouldn't be able to afford to produce without something like Kickstarter personally. Like, I do intend to do one for Never Die this year, and I'm hoping to make it, you know, like the hardback of editions that I'm going to produce of it really nice, for the simple fact that I can't do it without that sort of like, okay, here's the money up front to get it all produced beforehand. So I think there's definitely a use for it.
So are you, like, actually this is a whole different episode probably. I think there's my ignorance as to what's involved in Kickstarter probably plays a part in that. Laziness definitely does. Somebody buys a book and they're like, hey, can you mail me a signed copy? And I'm like, yes. And if they pay me up front, I'm like, fuck, dude, no, don't pay me up front. You're like, I'm not going to mail it to you now. I'm not going to get off my ass and go to the post office. I'm like, I will tell you when it's in the mail and then you can pay me for it. Because, like, I hate going to the post office. I hate it. I don't know. That whole different issue. Different episode.
We'll we can get into that in a different episode.
Moving on.
My take on it is, we'll wrap this up now because we've got more listener questions to get to after
my
this.
My mask is coming
My take
off.
On it. Dirk is no longer the goat, man. No, he is just a Mr. Ashton.
I feel naked.
We can see your secret identity now.
I am naked.
Everyone's naked on the inside, Dirk. Just how humans work.
On the inside? On the inside of their clothes?
Sure. We'll run with it.
Whatever.
Wrapping up the Sanderson thing before we move on to the next thing, I absolutely hated it because I'd never spent $400 on books in one pot before, but a few days ago I did because I thought I was going to get the e-books. I thought I was going to get the e-books, which is the cheapest tier, and then I had like some speaking engagements that I did, which gave me precisely the same amount of money that would cost to buy all four special edition hardbacks and get them shipped out. And I was like, this sounds kind of cool. And that's the most amount of money I've ever spent on a book. But I think for me, the reason why I did it is, first of all, he's my favorite author. So I've been absolutely pumped about this. Sorry, Mike. Sando is the number one. But
one day we're actually going to start a big old fight between Sanderson and Fletcher. I don't know how, but we'll do it.
I can't wait. UFC, let's go.
I'm sure he's super going to be aware of me.
WrestleMania, Fletcher versus Sanderson. I would pay to see that. I also think it's nice having the physical hardbacks on my shelf because it's going to be a reminder for me of like what is capable of being achieved as an author. Not saying that I'll ever get to his level of where he is, but I think it's cool to like know that he has breached in a very real way, like possibly some perceived barriers that people maybe had about what authors can achieve, particularly in the fantasy space before. Like, he literally had the number one Kickstarter of all time against everything that's ever been on there. And to me, that's pretty liberating and inspiring to see that someone who is writing the kind of books that I love reading, that I love writing, can make that level of success on it. So, those are my thoughts as we wrap up on that. So next question is from Bender, who asks, have you explored other genres/mediums? I hear some lit RPG authors, such as He Who Fights With Monsters, Dungeon Crawl, Lakao, Defiance of the Fall, etc., earn an average of $15,000 a year from Patreon and sales. Also, the general view is that it's easy to succeed in the genre since it's not dominated by Sandersons and Tolkiens. Many of you still play games. I know Rob does. So adding slight game mechanics, just a few hints of skill trees and very few stats, and it could be new ground. Have you all ever considered writing lit RPG? Why stick with fantasy when lit RPG is fantasy adjacent?
I cannot stand the very idea of lit RPG. Okay? I will never read it. I will never write it. Okay? I love computer games. I do. And I love writing. I do. I do not want them to cross. Like, if I felt like I wanted to read a lit RPG, I'd be like, no, I'm just going to go play a computer game. Thanks. It's certainly not for me. I've written a progression fantasy, which is kind of, I guess, lit RPG adjacent, and that's about as far as I'll ever go. But
you and I are both doing progression fantasy, which does have it more formalizes the whole. Most all fantasy books have a progression element, but it just formalizes it with specific steps or names of steps and levels that people go through. Lit RPG is the hardest core, where it has even tables of stats where people's like RPG stats style stats go. And
it's also it's automatically removed from the story, because
see the appeal of it. For folks, it's become huge. I could never write one. I'm not an RPG player myself, but progression fantasy is simply just another kind of stylistic format for fantasy in general. And I'm enjoying the hell out of the one that I'm working on. I don't think I could ever write lit RPG personally. I have nothing against it or people that read it, but. I don't think I could ever actually write one. I'd have to learn way too much. I hate to learn.
What about you, Mike?
I write because I want to tell stories. And for me, at least so far, the concept of lit RPG doesn't scratch that for me. So I have and will and do write in other genres. But lit RPG is just not going to be one. Now, if I wake up tomorrow and I'm like, oh, fuck, I have this crazy idea. If I have some way of taking lit RPG expectations and absolutely fucking them sideways, then I will write a lit RPG book. But, I mean, nice. That's the only way I do it is if I, well, if,
you
if
are
I had
that. You are an RPG guy, tabletop.
Oh, yeah, I love roleplay. Yeah. We recently we do Monday nights again now. So, like,
yeah,
old and have been roleplaying for a really long time, and we just, in the last month, started getting together. These are the dudes I roleplayed with in high school.
That's awesome.
We're back to Monday night campaigns, and so I love RPGs. I just, roleplaying scratches something different than writing. I'm always GM. I'm a terrible player, but I do love creating campaigns, doing all the world building and stuff. I mean, that's where the Obsidian Path books came from, was this monster campaign I ran like years ago. So I had all the world building done, magic systems all worked out and everything, but different thing. So no, I'm not going to write a lit RPG, but nothing
I think RPG in general has had an enormous influence on fantasy in general.
For sure.
Since the 80s.
Both in terms of tabletop and like computer games. I mean, like I can't even begin to like account for how much of an impact the Baldur's Gate games have had on my writing over the years, because, you know, I played them to death and I absolutely loved them and I still remember bits of them, and Baldur's Gate 2 still has one of the best villains in anything ever. So, you know, I still take inspiration from it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is kind of interesting because I sort of have written lit RPG.
Yeah?
But not in the way that I think Bender was asking this question. So,
you have that weird book that you did.
That's right. So I've got Siege of Treblin, which I can share, I think. On here.
Trying new technology. This can't be good.
Trying new technology. Let's go.
Oh, my God.
Can you see things are happening.
The cover for Siege of Treblin?
For anyone listening right now, they've got no idea. But
yeah, for anyone listening, I'm just going to describe what I've got up. So, basically, for the last 2 years, I've been writing an interactive fiction novel called Siege of Treblin. which is like a fantasy novel, but at the end of every scene you get to make a decision, and that influences what happens next in the story. And it's not lit RPG in the sense of like what most of the stuff is on Amazon, because this is like actually a game that just happens to be purely text-based, like one of those old text adventure things. But it does have a lot of the kind of fusion between video games and fantasy novels that Bender was sort of asking about in his question. So essentially, Siege of Treblin, this, I've got it up on my screen now, so if you're just listening to the audio, I'll describe it on here. But if you're watching the YouTube channel, this is the demo of the game. And basically, you read through scenes, and then at the end of each scene, you make a decision. It influences what happens next in the story. There is also stats and variables that you can affect. So depending on what decisions you make, you might be a very idealistic leader, or you might be a very pragmatic one. You might be a very charming leader, or you might be a very intimidating one, like Mike, I imagine, would be. And of course, you've got various relationships you can build with other characters throughout the game. And yeah, because you're defending your city from a siege, there are stats about your city that you pay attention to, like how strong is the wall? How many supplies do you have left? What are your finances looking like? And yeah, so that's basically the game. By the time this episode comes out, it may be... it may be released. It's releasing on April 14th, and it'll be like discounted from April 14th to April 20th, I think. And you can play the first three chapters for free. So
after that, it's only $1,400 a week.
That's right. One low payment of $14 million per week, not including shipping. So that's how we get you.
That's American accent. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what I was channeling with that accent, but it was channeling something, and I'm glad it's been out of my mouth now, and it's not in me anymore. I don't know where I was going with that sentence. But yeah, I guess that's sort of lit RPG adjacent. I really enjoyed writing this. It was a very cool experience, because it was pretty much, and Mike, it's probably similar to your DM experience. It's pretty much was a case of put the player in a position where they have to make a really difficult choice with no right answer, and then make them have to choose. And the game was basically a series of trying to get the player to that position where it's like, do you let these refugees into your city before you get attacked, risking some spies sneaking in with them as well, or do you tell them to just fend for themselves outside the wall of the city? It's an impossible choice.
Or do you kill them all?
That sort of is an option. So, and it will tell you like a lot about who you would be if you were a leader in this fantasy magical city that was under attack. So yeah, that's that.
Slightly different to DMing, because you give them choices and they have to select one, whereas as a DM you give them choices and then you find out that some guy's run off and he's deciding to go and burn down a tavern for no particular reason whatsoever.
Yes, that's true. Obviously a lot more freedom in Dungeons & Dragons, because yeah, you're not constrained by the rules of the game or whatever. Yeah, but that was a really fun experience writing it. Would I write a more standard lit RPG novel where it's like an actual book and it's got like stats and tables in the book? Kind of like with Mike, never say never if I found an interesting way to do it. It's just not something that I read regularly, and it's not something that I feel particularly called towards. So yeah, don't know if that would be a factor. And then also I think another aspect of the question, which we sort of skipped around, but is probably useful talking about, is, the fact that like, just because a genre, like particularly a niche fantasy genre, is doing well from a sales perspective right now, is not always a great reason to dive into it. And quite often can be a good reason to maybe not dive into it. If you're not that interested in, lit RPG, but you hear that, oh, lit RPG authors are doing really well. Probably not great to make yourself have to write a novel, because you probably won't enjoy it, and it probably won't be as good as somebody who actually does enjoy writing lit RPG.
I don't know. I think if you're the type of person who can write to market, then go for it. But if you're the type of person who writes, you know, what you want to write, what's playing on your brain, what is demanding space at that time, then probably trying to force yourself to write to market, that's not going to be the way to do it. But yeah, if you're capable of writing to a particular market and you see that market is working well, go for it.
yeah, if you can enjoy the process, I think go for it, is mm-hmm. what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, yeah, I don't think you'd suggest, like, oh, if you would hate the writing process, but you'd produce a good result, write for it. I feel like that's not... I mean, maybe if you're willing to, like, just not have a fun writing experience and then it sets you up mm-hmm. in your author career and then you can have more freedom down the track, maybe that's a good idea. But, yeah, I would just say try to find the intersection of, like, the marketable stuff and then also the stuff that you enjoy writing. Like, it sounds that, you know, cultivation or progression fantasy is sort of that for you, Dirk, and for you as well, maybe a bit, Rob. So, yeah. All right. Next question. This is probably the last question for this episode. Also a reminder, we have a feature on our website where you can send in voice notes now. So hopefully in the future when we do these listener questions, you can go to our website, click on send us a voice message, and we can play it out on the show.
Sorry, I keep giggling because either Rob's really hungry and his stomach's grumbling, or he's got a puppy.
Yeah, is there a
making little puppy noises.
Yeah, she's just sat there in her bed just like...
Nice. Cool, so last question is, just discovered your show and really enjoyed... I'd love a starting from scratch episode. Sorry, this is just going to be a single question. Where if someone specifically, i.e. the person who's asking this question, was starting their publishing journey this year, what stuff should they do leading up to their launch? And this person is planning a 3-book rapid release strategy. So presumably they have 3 books that are already written.
Rob has done that.
Which is impressive.
That's a very big question.
Yeah,
it's a massive question. Do we want to shelve that for a later episode?
I think so. That's an episode in its own. There's so much to go over. I mean, that's basically like, how do I launch my career?
It's a whole episode on just a rapid release launch strategy.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's a whole episode.
I'll save that.
Yeah.
Step one would be go back in time 10 years. And start befriending people on social media so that when your book comes out, you've already got like all these contacts. Yeah. Rather than, you know, doing it probably the way all of us did, which was like put out a book and then start trying to talk to
no
people.
I knew absolutely no one.
No one. I didn't think you could even remember my agent being like, oh yeah, just befriend famous writers on Twitter. I'm like, you can't just do that. They're writers.
They're famous people.
I can't talk to them. It's like, go be friendly with Mark Lawrence. Like, I can't. He'll be mean to me.
And now people are saying, go be friendly with Mike Fletcher.
That's right.
And of course, you can't.
Send him a grilled cheese sandwich. That's how you become friends with him.
Yeah. You be mean to him.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, we should probably wrap up this episode here because I don't have any other listener questions at the top of hand. So
we're going to wrap up this episode by not answering a question.
Sorry about that anticlimactic end to it. But I think we answered some interesting stuff in that episode and had some interesting takes. So if you have any listener questions you would like us to answer in future episodes, feel free to head on to our website, wizardswarriorswords.com, and you can submit a listener question either using the contact form or by using the voice message feature. We will see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.